Holy One, may the meditations of our hearts, the words of our mouths be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. So if you were an alien and you had come to Earth and you were trying to understand this strange thing called fatherhood, and you were reading the newspaper and Hallmark cards, I think this is what you would think that a father was. Fathers are a strange breed of human beings whose normal habitat is called a golf course. Fathers are easily distracted by small white balls rolling across green lawns. Fathers are revered in society for their ability to barbecue. Barbecuing, being a manly pursuit, requires very, 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 very large utensils. My husband and I have been laughing about this recently. Perhaps it has something to do with golf courses, but fathers are also obsessed with lawnmowers. But they can be distracted by things with flashing lights and loud noises, such as large screen televisions. They are known to have cold feet, which explains why socks are the specials on Father's Day, and they have a strange fascination for colored ties. And if our aliens are reading all of those ads and cards about fathers, they too might be distracted by the references to golf and barbecues. And they might not even realize that fatherhood had anything to do with children. When we hear statements from politicians and some Christian pundits about family values, you might think that the Bible had a single image of the perfect family, and all the stories in the Bible showed exactly that kind of family. It does not. In fact, a lot of the families in the stories in the Bible are beyond dysfunctional. King David was not a great father. He ended up at war with his son. Abraham tried to make Isaac a sacrifice. Jacob was a polygamist who showed such favoritism to one son, Joseph, that the other son sold Joseph into slavery and told their father he'd been killed by lions. But there are great stories of love and tenderness, of Father Joseph raising a child, Jesus, who wasn't his, putting his own life in jeopardy when King Herod tried to kill little boys, going into hiding, running to Egypt to keep the child safe, or of a father riding for days to find Jesus to beg for the life and healing of his daughter, or of a priest who prayed and prayed and prayed with his wife for a child that finally came, a gift of old age, the child who would become John the Baptist. In recent times, we've gone to a lot of trouble to remind people that God is both mother and father, and part of that has been a good and worthy effort. But sometimes we forget that when Jesus spoke about God the Father, it had very special meaning to the people that he spoke to, because he was speaking to crowds of people whose children had no fathers. Fathers died. They'd been taken into slavery, killed in wars with Romans, sold for debt, enslaved as prisoners to enforce Roman control over Palestine. It was a country that had rebelled against Rome before, and so some of the children were the result of rape and forced marriage. When Jesus says, "Our Father who art in heaven," or in another translation, "Daddy," Jesus speaks of a particular kind of father. He speaks of a God who is father to everyone, no matter who they are, orphan, illegitimate, terribly poor, and that was not the common understanding at the time. This was father to someone who was disabled, blind, deaf, or sick. The Father in heaven is father to all, and everyone can claim the right to call God Father and the right to the inheritance God offers. Everyone. Imagine what that could mean to someone who had never known a father, but longed for one, who had been told that they had no name of their own, and therefore no place in culture, no seat in the synagogue, no apprenticeship and no future. To be told they are a child of God with possibilities offered by God. Jesus also spoke of a loving father, a father who cared. This was a gift to those with no father, but it was also an example to those who didn't know how to be fathers. Those who have not had a loving father may never know what it means. Loving, providing, forgiving, present, building a future, a kingdom where children live and love. And despite all the advertising, our culture has a very mixed relationship with that kind of fatherhood, as it does with motherhood. Although we celebrate fatherhood once a year, our economic culture tells men that fatherhood should never interfere with work. Our political culture says that fatherhood is just an add-on to a separate life. And our legal culture implies that a father's responsibility is just discipline. All parents get mixed messages. Your kid should be outside playing, your kid should be inside studying. Your kids should learn to be independent. Your kids should always be looked after. You should have them in all these activities, but you shouldn't keep them so busy. And you should work harder, but you shouldn't work so much. A friend was telling me the other day that he was in trouble at work from his female boss because he'd taken time from work to see his disabled son in hospital. He works in healthcare. Being a father is not easy. When is discipline the right way to go? When is just backing off? What do you do when you can't afford what you think other kids have? And what do you do when your kids are just, quite frankly, a pain? Our kids are never like that, right? I was looking up Bible advice for fathers, and one of my favorites is, fathers do not exasperate your children. And that was written long before we had to ask our children for help with computers and PVR recorders. Do not exasperate your children, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Paul thought this was so important, he wrote it to both the Ephesians and the Colossians. On the other hand, the Bible contains an entire book, which is mostly advice from a father to a son. To a son, there's good advice in there for girls too, but quite frankly, it's intended for sons. And it begins with the reading that we heard this morning. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. Hear, my child, your father's instruction. Do not reject your mother's teaching, for they are a fair garland for your head and pendants for your neck. The book goes on to warn children about evil companions and drunkenness and how to find the right women and avoid the wrong ones. But it also gives advice about how you seek wisdom. And that advice is not just for the child of the man, but for every child of God, for fathers and mothers and sisters and sons, for aunts and grandfathers and the old and the young. It goes like this. My child, if you accept my words and treasure up my commandments within you, making your ear attentive to wisdom and inclining your heart to understanding, if you indeed cry out for insight and raise your voice for understanding, if you seek it like silver and search for it as for hidden treasures, then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. For the Lord gives wisdom, and from God's mouth come knowledge and understanding. God stores up sound wisdom for the upright and is a shield to those who walk blamelessly, guarding the paths of justice and preserving the way of God's faithful ones. Then you will understand righteousness and justice and equity, every good path, for wisdom will come into your heart, and knowledge will be pleasant to your soul. Prudence will watch over you, and understanding will guard you. Make that your Father's Day prayer, to hold the seeking of wisdom and justice so close to all our hearts that from God's mouth will come understanding and knowledge. Even when we look at our children and have no idea what to do next. May it be so. Amen.